Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love. CMF Curo is the country's first Catholic healthcare ministry to provide an affordable health-sharing solution rooted in Catholic teaching and community. Learn more at mycatholichealthcare.com. That's mycatholichealthcare.com. CMF Curo, healthcare fully alive. What are you doing this Lent? The St. Paul Center is streaming their newest video Bible study for free starting Ash Wednesday. Based on Scott Hahn's renowned covenantal theology, this is a study no one should miss. Invite your friends, Catholic or not. Don't miss your chance to see this premium study for free. Go to stpaulcenter.com to sign up today.
Welcome to the Salt and Light Podcast. Be salt and light, glorifying the Lord by your life.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Salt and Light Podcast. I am your host, Annie Fulkerson, not joined this week by Chuck Fulkerson. I am joined by a return guest who I'm really, really excited to have on the show again. Welcome to Lauren Enriquez.
Thank you so much for having me back.
Yeah, it's really exciting. Lauren was on the show about just a wee bit over a year ago on the show, right after the March for Life. And Lauren is back because a lot has happened in the pro-life world in the past 12 months, maybe backloaded just toward the last few weeks right. In particular. And so it's really timely, and we're really blessed to have her on the show. So, and speaking of pro-life, you are expecting very, very soon.
Yes. In about 2 months, we'll welcome number 4, which will be our first girl.
Yes. And okay. And so we were chatting a little bit before the show, and you have to relay this little bit of information. So I was asking how your boys, the 3 boys, and how old are they again?
They're 6, 4, and 3.
Right. And how they were reacting to the news of not having a new brother, but having a baby sister. Yes. And so it was hilarious.
Yeah. The boys are ecstatic that we're having a girl, and the reason is because they think of our family as the Mario Kart unit. So my 6-year-old thinks he's Mario, my 4-year-old thinks he's Luigi, and my 3-year-old thinks he's Toad. And then they think their dad and I are other characters, but they've been waiting on Princess Peach to join the crew. And so I'm only a little bit nervous that she's gonna pop out and be like immobile and non-communicative, and they're gonna be like, what the heck,
put her back.
Put her, like, bring her back in 2 years when she can play Mario Kart with me. So, yeah, but they're very, very excited. So I couldn't be more pleased.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. That's great. Well, I was wondering if, you know, we'll just kind of dive right in. I was wondering if you could give us, since you were on the show last, a kind of synopsis, a year in review of, yeah. Because you're super involved. We talked on the show last, and I'll put a link in the show notes to the show that Lauren was on, so you can kind of get, you know, a little bit of a background on, actually a lot of a background on her. But you are very active in Human Coalition. Mm-hmm. And so I was wondering if maybe you could just give like a year in review in sure. The pro-life movement.
Sure. Okay. So the year in review would largely center on President Trump, who's arguably the most pro-life president that we've had in American history. There have been some ups and downs, as you know. State by state, what we're seeing is that some states are moving to virtually outlaw abortion outright, and then other states are moving to completely allow abortion with no restrictions up until birth and even including infanticide. So we're seeing kind of this dichotomy happening between the states where there's not as much like gray area or middle ground in terms of legislation. President Trump has continued to appoint or to nominate really pro-life judges and justices. So we're really happy that the balance, especially of the Supreme Court, is leaning pro-life. It will be interesting to see which of the cases that are kind of coming coming forward and being presented to the Supreme Court could potentially be the case that overturns Roe v. Wade. But if that happens, we're going to have to deal with this reality that abortion law has been kicked back to the states. And now we've got states that don't allow abortion at all and states that allow abortion up to infanticide. So the landscape is really going to change, but it's not necessarily going to be time for us to stop and celebrate the victory, because overturning Roe v. Wade is possible in the near future, but it will present its own set of challenges. So President Trump has been really good on the justices and judges side. There's more executive action I'd like to see. I'd love to see HHS, the Department of Health and Human Services, where the abortion industry gets all of its government funding. It's all kind of funneled through this one executive agency. I would love to see them defund the abortion industry. They're giving the abortion industry well over $500 million a year through various channels and departments and agencies within HHS. I'd love to see them take that away from the abortion industry and really use their executive authority to raise awareness about what abortion does, how it affects women, educate the public, and also fund a rescue system that will help to counteract the work that the abortion industry has done for the last 46 years. And now, unfortunately, we celebrated memorialized 46 years since Roe v. Wade. That death toll reached 61 million last year from abortion. And those are the ones that we know of that have been tracked. So we have a long way to go. And President Trump has been terrific. Overall, it's been a relatively good year for the pro-life movement, but there's still a lot that could be done, and we don't have to rely on Congress to do it. There are things that could be done right now. So that's kind of the message to the pro-life movement, is continue to encourage President Trump to be that pro-life leader and to provide executive action that could make a difference right now.
Mm-hmm. With with respect to the Department of Homeland Health and Human Services, mm-hmm. The taking the teeth out of the HHS mandate, so to speak, mm-hmm. With the contraceptive mandate, mm-hmm. do you think that's an initial sort of move toward doing more in the pro-life movement, or do you think they're unrelated? That came to my mind. I was wondering what you thought of that.
I think there is some relationship, because the HHS mandate completely disregarded the consciences of people who believe the science that tells us that certain contraceptive methods are abortifacient.
Right.
This is something that the abortion industry denies flat out, but it's a scientific reality. So I think that was a really good step. But there's still a lot more that needs to be done. And conscience protection just kind of scratches the surface of the things that the executive branch could be doing to really cripple the abortion industry and strengthen the pro-life movement.
Mm-hmm. And when you, so we talk about abortifacients, can you just explain to our audience what that means? Because I don't think people understand that there are different forms of contraception. Mm-hmm. Maybe not everybody understands that.
Yeah.
Can you go into that?
Contraception is kind of a deceptive term, because obviously the etymology is against conception. It means sperm and egg are never uniting in the first place. Mm-hmm. And there are methods of contraception that do that. Barrier methods will prevent sperm and egg from meeting. But there are other methods that have kind of a mode of operation that will, if and when conception does take place. So the other modes of operation, like preventing conception in the first place by thickening the cervical mucus or whatever that drug or device is aimed at doing, doesn't work and the woman does ovulate and conception does occur. The third mode of operation for those drugs and devices will be to cause the woman's body to expel that preborn child, that human being that has been created inside of her. And the way that the abortion industry gets around this reality is that when contraception was popularized, they actually changed the definition of pregnancy. And so they'll say that contraception doesn't end a pregnancy, because a pregnancy doesn't start until the embryo has implanted in the mother's womb. And the abortifacient action of most of these drugs and devices would happen before implantation. So that's kind of how they've skirted the reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, you know, if we're unfamiliar with human anatomy, the conception actually occurs in the fallopian tube, right? Mm-hmm. And so it will then travel down the fallopian tube, and it's usually 6 to 9 days right. or so.
So they've got that window of opportunity that they've callously taken advantage of to mm-hmm. say it's not pregnancy, and therefore somehow we're supposed to believe that there's magically no human yeah. until it's...
Well, it's actually convenient for them to... use science, you know, in that respect, you know, when pregnancy right. occurs, but then not use science when it comes to, you know, when the life is actually, you know, formed.
Yeah, yeah. Totally.
It's convenient.
Their use of science is very bizarre. I was glad to see that the March for Life theme this year was unique from day one, and the whole focus was on how science is on the pro-life movement side, mm-hmm. because none of the pro-life movement is denying any of these realities. It's mm-hmm. the abortion movement that's trying to stay away from the realities that are inconvenient to them. I have even been seeing arguments on Twitter from prominent abortionists that an unborn child does not exist. It's not a thing, because it's not the rhetorical term that they use for the unborn child. Mm. So the question is, does the child just materialize when it emerges, you know, from the womb? Mm. There's all these implications of their rhetoric and their science denial that mm. have real effects on how we view the law and how we address abortion. Mm-hmm. And so it's important for pro-lifers to understand the science.
And it seems like, you know, just looking back in recent history, and recent, I mean like the 40s, 50s, 60s, up mm-hmm. to up to now, it seems like the philosophical and humanities community and the scientific community have almost flip-flopped in terms of who views truth and accepts objective truth, right?
Right.
I mean, prior to the 60s and the 70s, it was the humanities who were studying philosophy, you know, who defended and proclaimed truth as an objective thing, not this emotional relativistic modernism that we experience now. And now we've more seen that scientists are looking at, well, no, there is objective truth, and we're seeing that, you know, and mm-hmm. it's gone into the humanities and this liberal progressivism that we've seen that is trying to make the case that truth is all relative.
Yeah. And it's hard to argue that scientific realities don't exist mm-hmm. when we have the technology that we have today. So there's a lot of scientists that are doing great work and just sharing their objective findings. But you've also got a lot of scientifically minded people in the abortion movement that are more ideologically motivated than they are by the actual science that they're supposed to be studying or promoting. I mean, this is what you see when you have OB-GYNs who do abortion and who argue for abortion on the basis that of things like the unborn is not a thing. You're like, but you're also a scientist. Mm-hmm. So that relativism is really tripping up people within the scientific community.
Well, and also there's the fact that, like, when you actually take the instrument, you have to grab onto a thing in order to abort the child. Mm-hmm. So that argument falls apart pretty quickly in a grotesque way.
The way to argue with an abortionist is to just ask them to describe what they do mm-hmm. in an abortion. And that is the question that they'll never answer. Mm-hmm. So it tells a lot.
Yeah. Well, since we're on this sort of grotesque issue, let's move to New York.
Oh gosh. Okay.
So let's talk about New York. If you're unaware, let's just go through the law and, mm-hmm. and how the law was passed.
Okay. So New York, actually grotesquely, on the anniversary of Roe v. Wade, announced that Governor Cuomo had signed the Reproductive Health Act, the RHA. And this act allows abortion until birth, so a woman can be in labor, dilating, and still have an abortion. There's been a lot of denial that this is the case, but that is what the law says. But the law goes far beyond just removing protections for the preborn child. The law does a lot to harm women, which is why it's very interesting to see which women are celebrating the RHA. The law decriminalized killing a preborn child even outside of an abortion setting. So if an abusive partner, and pregnant women are very often victims of partner violence and homicide. Homicide is either the first or second leading cause of death for pregnant women. So if an abusive partner kills her preborn child through an act of violence done to her, she no longer has a legal recourse to get justice for that child's life. So even within the abortion philosophy, if this were a quote-unquote wanted child, which supposedly it was the line of demarcation for the abortion community as to whether a person had value or not, mm-hmm. if this is a wanted child and somebody else kills it, she no longer has that legal recourse to have that abusive partner punish for an act of homicide. So protections like that were removed. Non-physicians were given permission to start committing abortions in New York as well. So if we really care about women's health, why are we giving non-physicians the right to do a blind procedure? Abortion is a very dangerous procedure, obviously for the child, but also for the woman. So we have to ask if this is really about women's rights and women's autonomy, no matter how perverse your view of those things is, how on earth would we remove protections from even the mothers of wanted children?
Mm-hmm. And with this, with this procedure, we know that especially second trimester and third trimester, typically there is a dismemberment of the child.
Yeah.
Now with New York, I mean, you have like we were talking about, we have very large husbands, you and I, so we deliver 9 and 10 pound children.
Correct.
And so, I had posted a distasteful meme when it was passed that, my children were born at, 2:33 in the morning, and in New York I could now kill them at 2:32 in the morning.
Right.
So what does that look like in New York now? I mean,
yeah, well, that's a good question. And there is actually a lot of ambiguity as to whether this is going to necessitate infanticide. If a woman decides while she's in labor that she wants to have an abortion, those late-term abortions in the third trimester are typically week-long processes. They involve going in several days before the actual quote-unquote stillbirth to have an injection that will kill the child by causing it to have a massive heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
And then that child will kind of not decompose, but it will sit inside of her while they take measures to artificially dilate her, by inserting instruments and drugs into her cervix to cause her to dilate. And then eventually she'll deliver the child either intact or through dismemberment. But if the woman chooses while she's in labor that she wants to have an abortion, it is a valid question to be asking, how is the abortion going to be carried out? Because the way that typically very late term abortions would be done in the past was through partial birth abortion, where the mm-hmm. child would be delivered breech and killed while it was just alive halfway outside of the mother. But now that the common method of late term abortion is through this injection to the child, the question is, how would quote unquote fetal demise be guaranteed? And how are you going to guarantee that there isn't a live birth? Very often we know that there is a live birth, and we know this from not just people like Kermit Gosnell, where mm-hmm. there are court documents proving this, but we also know from investigations like Live Action's Inhuman investigation several years ago, a pregnant woman who was about as far along as I am went into a number of late-term abortionist offices across the country, because keep in mind, New York is not the only state that allows this, and medical providers told her point blank, oh yeah, babies are born alive, but we just don't resuscitate them. And so the question is really valid. Like, how are you actually planning to facilitate these abortions? Mm-hmm. And we should also point out, infanticide and abortion are morally equal, because this is a human being.
Right.
It's not that there's this massive difference between the two things, but in the eyes of the law in New York, infanticide is still technically not legal, as far as I'm aware.
Mm-hmm.
So,
is there anything in the law that you've seen that prevents, a doctor from committing infanticide if it still is against the law? First, who is responsible for the law, right? And this, because sometimes, laws are created by, with these like ideological factories, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, but then there's like the real life. Yeah. And, but then there's like the real life of actually mm-hmm. carrying it out. So
yeah.
is there this like, you know, disjointedness about, you know, about this?
Yeah, I think this law probably came from Planned Parenthood's lobbyists. Several groups have actively kind of like owned the legislation along with Governor Cuomo and the New York sponsors of the bill.
Who claims to be a Catholic, by the way.
Who claims to be. That's a whole other can of worms. Mm-hmm. But your question about are there protections to actually prevent the infanticide is very valid, because actually one of the things that the RHA did was struck down a protection that was existing on the books in New York that mandated that if a baby did survive an abortion, that medical care would be rendered. So there is kind of like a loophole that now that would allow for infanticide, as far as my reading of the law is concerned. I'm not a lawyer, but it's pretty clear what is being stated there.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so that sort of brings us to the comments from the governor of Virginia, mm-hmm. doesn't it? I mean,
it does, unfortunately.
Yeah. So can you explain maybe what was going on there?
Yeah. So I just want to, for some context, I think it's important that people understand that the Supreme Court rulings that legalized abortion fully allow states to legalize abortion up until birth. These are not laws that will be taken to the Supreme Court
right.
for redress and reconsideration, because Roe v. Wade and its companion case Doe v. Bolton, as reaffirmed by 1992's Planned Parenthood versus Casey, fully allow abortion up until birth for any reason that the woman might want it. And it actually makes it illegal for states to regulate abortion prior to viability or earlier stages of pregnancy. So while states like New York and Virginia have full reign to allow abortion up until the moment of birth, pro-life states like Texas and Alabama cannot regulate abortion before a certain point in pregnancy. So that's an important context for this, because I think a lot of people are looking at this thinking, this can't be real, this doesn't happen, the Supreme Court will strike this down. No, this is real, it has been happening. 7 other states and DC already had this these laws on the books before New York. New York was just kind of like a landmark case because it was so highly celebrated. But this was already the norm in other states. So then you move to Virginia, and Virginia moved to pass a very similar bill. It looked really similar to New York's abortion until birth legislation. And that is what the hearings about the bill seemed to indicate, that this was very similar to New York. But obviously, if you don't live under a rock, you probably have by now heard a clip of the governor of New York, Ralph Northam, giving an infamous radio interview.
And President Trump addressed it on his Union address as well.
Yes. And Northam, who is a pediatric neurologist, not somebody who doesn't know what he's talking about, told this radio interviewer that the law would kind of enshrine a woman's right to choose, this very interesting rhetoric that they use. But he actually went further, which we've come to find out is something that his PR team probably gets frustrated that he does regularly. And he went further and explained that if a child were born and the parents didn't want the child, that a discussion would ensue between the mother and the doctor as to what would be done with that live baby. And so it's very, very clear that in Ralph Northam's perception, this law that thankfully failed in Virginia also included a right to infanticide. And so for whatever reason, that's what it took to wake the country up to what's going on with the abortion genocide.
Mm-hmm.
And praise God for that, because I don't know what else it would have taken to wake people up to what is happening to 61 million children in our country. Mm-hmm. But they did wake up to the extent that President Trump addressed Ralph Northam's comments in his State of the Union address. He reaffirmed the dignity of the preborn child in very beautiful terms, even talking about the holy image of God in which these children are made. So I thought that was a very strong point that he made. And he called for specific legislation that has failed multiple times in Congress, but legislation to protect children who are capable of feeling pain.
Mm-hmm.
So at the point of pain capability, which is 20 weeks at the very latest, Some argue it's as early as 8. Children would be protected. That legislation won't pass. It didn't pass under a Republican House and Senate. It certainly won't pass under a Democrat House and a Republican Senate. But it was a good wake-up call for people to kind of have these images in their head and to be thinking, what can we do to address abortion? And one thing that he could do is ensure that Planned Parenthood's funding is either removed or severely curtailed, because that will be an important step.
Yeah, I would say it definitely woke people up, because even people like Chuck, who's not necessarily like, doesn't have the pulse of the pro-life movement or whatever, you know, and is involved in different ministries and different, you know, work. Not that he doesn't support it, but just, you know, not as, you know, not as involved as you. I saw him tweet, you know, just came up on my phone that he retweeted the governor's comments with just a "Holy Mother of God, please pray for us." And Chuck doesn't normally do stuff, you know, like that, but it at least, you know, it, not that, you know, he carries his rosary in his pocket, you know, and prays the rosary and everything and prays, but doesn't necessarily retweet like a, you know, a comment like that. And I think it just really did wake people up to, and you know, the other thing too was, you know, I mentioned that meme that I put up of, you know, Chuck holding our son and me holding our other son and the minute they were born. And, now that it's legal to kill them the minute before, or actually the minute of, you know, now
possibly after.
And you know, being on you know, doing this podcast, putting yourself out there, you know, is a very vulnerable thing. And I can tell you the amount of praise we get is minuscule and the amount of attack we get is massive.
Yeah.
When I put out that tweet, I got zero attack. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know what I would love to get your take on it, but my take would just be that it's indefensible.
Yeah. No one, even in the radical abortion movement, is coming to the defense of infanticide. The furthest that they're willing to go is to try to gaslight people and say, no, that's not actually what we're talking about. We're not talking about infanticide. Yeah. One person, quote-unquote doctor, an abortionist on Twitter, went so far as to call it a perinatal hospice measure. I mean, that's the extent to which they're willing to gaslight people on what they heard with their own ears. Governor Northam's comments were extremely clear. And so, yeah, you're exactly right. There hasn't been anyone coming to the defense of infanticide. There have been people making comments that are totally deflective of what was actually said. So that's a good point.
Last year we talked about, you were very hopeful in the, you know, that our generation, cause we're similar in age, you know, would end abortion. And the, you know, according to like CDC statistics from like 2006 to 2015, we've seen like a 24% drop in abortion. And what is it, like 1.3%? I'm going off memory here, but this like 1.3% is done, you know, in late term, you know, after, what is it, 30 something weeks or something like that.
It's but less than 1%, I believe, but that's still tens of thousands.
And so, but we don't know all of them. That doesn't necessarily, you know, account for all of them. Right. Accounting for that drop and our hope, but then seeing legislation like this pass, how do you reconcile those two things?
Yeah.
What, you know, from where you are and your work?
Yeah. Well, what I'm really seeing is that shakeout that I kind of mentioned earlier, where you have pro-life states like Texas that are saying, we don't want any abortion. We just want abortion to be completely outlawed. And they're getting trigger laws on the books that are saying, look, the minute Roe v. Wade is overturned, this is a pro-life state, no abortion here. So that's good. On the other side, you've got these other states that are abortion till birth, including infanticide. So what it looks like our generation is going to contend with if and when Roe is overturned is something similar to what the slavery abolitionists contended with what was going on south and north of the Mason-Dixon line. South of the line, I mean, these geographical boundaries, you had unlimited license to kill because we've decided that these people aren't human. And north of that line, everyone was protected. So it's going to be this battle between the states, I think. And I think that's what our generation needs to be prepared for. Mm-hmm. I'm still hopeful because I'm a hopelessly optimistic person, for better or for worse. I think the world needs both optimists and pessimists and everyone in between. Our generation is the first generation that has seen what happens when a third of their classmates and brothers and sisters are missing. And we've keenly felt that. I mean, there's psychological evidence for what our generation has been through. There are people who have survivor's guilt because they know that their sibling was aborted or their cousin was aborted, or that they're conscious that their classes in college and high school should have been bigger. So this is a generation that's keenly aware of the impact abortion has had. They've also seen firsthand the impact that abortion has on women. So these are people whose sisters and moms have had abortions, or who they themselves have had abortions. Mm-hmm. So yes, the abortion rate is going down slowly. It's a little bit muddy as to exactly how much it's going down, because it's hard to track certain abortion methods, and telemed abortions are becoming more popular. Mail order chemical abortions are starting to increase.
That's a thing?
Yeah, you can order abortion pills online.
Without a prescription?
Technically, I mean, if we get into the nuances of the law, not necessarily, but it's something that's happening and that is becoming popular. Wow. And that's actually actively being promoted by the abortion movement as an act of kind of like defiance against the Trump administration. Mm. So there are these kind of, you have to kind of come at it with a nuanced view. You have to say, yes, the abortion rate is going down. No, it's not time to celebrate. Mm-hmm. And always be really taking a cold, hard look at where are we right now? Because a lot of pro-lifers, I've noticed, have this tendency to just apply platitudes to what we're trying to do. So they'll say, I don't understand why more people just don't place their children for adoption. But that's kind of overlooking like a whole set of problems that pregnant women are facing. So we have to really look at like, what is the actual reality of the abortion landscape and what pregnant women are contending with? Who is the average pregnant woman? What are her needs? You know, and kind of be willing to shift with the changing nature of the times. Mm-hmm. So I think our generation is ready to do that. And I hope that this infanticide debate kind of triggers a new renewal of that resolve.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're already seeing in certain Eastern Asian countries who did selective abortions that their population is completely mismatched now.
Yeah.
So, and there are just literally not enough women to continue the population. Yeah.
Well, you might be shocked to hear this, but that's actually made it onto home turf, where the African American community is now below replacement. And this is a community that has perpetually undergone a disproportionate number of abortions, because the abortion industry was founded with the goal of wiping out that community. And it's working. That's something that we need to be aware of. Mm-hmm. And be willing
going
to...
Going back to Sanger,
yes,
Margaret Sanger.
Going back mm-hmm. to Margaret Sanger, and not just Sanger, but all of her cohorts, Rockefeller, presidents like Richard Nixon. I mean, there were government programs created with the intention of controlling the Black population. And we need to be aware that that's happening, because the civil rights movement isn't fully achieved yet. We need to be coming to the aid of these people who are discriminated against consistently, and now to the point that the African American fertility rate is falling below replacement. That's a crisis that we need to recognize and realize it's
so interesting, because if you've watched the State of the Union address, mm-hmm. we had 89 out of the 102 women who are now, you know, newly appointed and elected, who were all wearing white mm-hmm. At the State of the Union in honor of the suffragettes, and they did not clap. They yeah. didn't stand. They looked quite ornery.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. when President Trump was talking about specifically abortion. Mm-hmm. So those two things don't really seem to jive at all.
No.
You know, because they were on the Democrat side of the aisle.
Right. Yeah. They're living this revisionist version of history that never happened. So the first wave feminist movement was explicitly pro-life. I mean, without exception. Susan B. Anthony and her colleagues and cohorts in the U.S. and in England were pro-life women. They believed that abortion was an anti-woman act. And so when you see this bizarre, like, recreation of the suffragist movement, you realize that history has really been revised among some groups of Americans. And you really feel this impetus to educate people about the real history of feminism and the real history of the abortion movement, because those two things have been flipped in complete reverse. Mm-hmm. Margaret Sanger was not a feminist. She was someone who wanted to control populations that she didn't think were fit to exist. That was her goal in life. It wasn't to empower women. It was to control certain populations, because she was part of a philosophy of people known as eugenicists. Mm-hmm. And she was so passionate about that she worked with the U.S. government and very large financial backers to make that dream a reality. Not only did she succeed, but she's gone down in history as a champion of feminism. So it's not what happened in reality, and we need to wake up and realize that revisionist history is being lived out right now.
How do you think she was able to do that, even though it wasn't something that she was supporting? Like, being remembered as a feminist, mm-hmm. even though... Which I hate that word.
Yeah.
But.
Well, Sanger herself was really good at marketing what she wanted to do. She knew that her vision was distasteful to a lot of populations. Mm-hmm. So she would frame her arguments in terms that she knew people wanted to hear. But then in other writings and interviews, it would become very clear. And by and large, her associations, who she was friends with, it became clear what her true motives were. So she would talk about giving women power over their bodies, but then she would go on Mike Wallace's show and say things like, "I think the greatest sin in the world is for a child to be born who shouldn't be born." And so there was a huge disconnect between Margaret Sanger's real motivations and her rhetoric, but Planned Parenthood's great strength throughout its more than 100-year history now has been to turn words on their head. Mm-hmm. They have usurped
and the emotional
language.
Appeal, right?
Yeah, they've got the emotional appeal, and they've usurped language completely. I mean, to the point where if you follow them on Twitter, nothing they tweet makes sense at all. In any, like, version of reality, mm-hmm. doesn't make sense.
Okay. So about... You know, we talked last time you were here about Human Coalition. Mm-hmm. So how's the organization doing now?
Great. We've grown a lot. We're over 150 employees now, I think. Probably more than that, because I can't keep track of it. We're in quite a few cities. We have our own owned and operated women's care clinics where we're reaching women who are actively seeking an abortion, and we're serving them. We're serving their families. We're helping them to get started on the right foot and to have strong families. But we've also got a virtual clinic now in Texas. So we're helping women on the spot. We're allowing them to speak with nurses. Wow. As soon as they call, they're not having to come into the clinic physically to have that first contact with a nurse. And we're connecting them with the resources that they need when they're pregnant, whether that's a government program or a nonprofit that can help them with a certain area of their need. So it's been very successful, very beautiful to see. I don't have the number in front of me, but we're well over 11,000 children rescued to mm-hmm. date. So if you follow us on Twitter, you'll get those updates. I know you like those updates.
I do. I love those updates. And yeah. even just a year ago, I think it was only like 7,000 mm-hmm. when we started doing the show.
I think so,
show.
Yeah, because so, we rescued more than 3,000 children last year.
Yeah. 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 So I thought it was a big deal when we hit 8, and then they just kept climbing
it
and
did.
It really felt almost exponential.
Yeah,
like
it
how
has
much
been
it's
exponential.
Growing.
And our goal, I mean, we look at how many children are dying in the abortion genocide. Our goal is to make abortion unthinkable and unavailable. And we have about 3,000 children dying a day still in America. So last year, Human Coalition rescued about one day. Of children who were aborted. Yeah. And on the one hand, that's such a huge step for us, but on the other hand, we're like, okay, well, there's 364 more days of the year mm-hmm. that we need to rescue, and we're not going to stop.
And I think next year's a leap year, so step it up.
There you go. Exactly.
So last year we had talked a little bit about grassroots, you know, movements, mm-hmm. like what people can do, because you know, if you have a conscience at all and you're, you know, you're listening to the show, it's, you're probably very disturbed and moved, mm-hmm. you know, at this point. And so what, you know, we had talked a little bit about grassroots, you know, sort of movements, mm-hmm. especially when it comes to men. Mm-hmm. And do you have any other advice, you know, for, especially with what's going on in today's political and cultural climate? Yeah.
Well, first of all, and this sounds cliche, but I mean it in complete seriousness, abortion is a spiritual battle. Mm-hmm. It's a battle between good and evil. It's a battle for souls, and it's a battle for actual human lives. So prayer is so, so important. If you feel like there's nothing else you can do, or you feel helpless in the face of what's going on, you need to be praying. Everyone needs to be praying for an end to abortion. Yes, we need mm-hmm. to ask Our Lady for intercession. This is a huge piece of the puzzle of ending abortion, is recognizing that it's a spiritual battle and treating it as such first and foremost. So be guarded or clothed in prayer when you approach abortion, whether your primary ministry in pro-life is prayer or that's just how you start your day. Either way, it's very important because you will encounter opposition from evil when you try to do something about abortion. So that praying cannot be overstated. There are so many good initiatives that are going on. Like I said, being active in pro-life, what I said earlier, is recognizing kind of the changing landscape of abortion, the changing nature of who is seeking an abortion. And so staying plugged into the reality of what's going on in the abortion debate is important. So just being on top of the news and the legislation and the sociology of, you know, who's seeking an abortion. I find that to be really important because I want to keep my focus where it's most useful. And so that's another thing that I think people can do, is just stay educated and then be outspoken about that. It was something else we talked about last year. I think people underestimate the power of speaking their belief on abortion because, yes, speaking the truth, because mm-hmm. so many people, I think, are desperate to say, me too, like, I agree with you, but they're not given the opportunity. So give people the opportunity to relate with you on that level and strategize about how you can serve your local community or address a certain aspect of abortion. But my personal opinion is that everybody can help to end abortion. Whatever your talent or proclivity is, if you're an artist or a writer or a financial guru, I mean, literally any talent or contribution that you can make as an individual can serve the pro-life movement. So if you need any ideas, people can always feel free to reach out to me on Twitter. My DMs, direct messages, are open. So if people actually want to be like, here's my talents, what can I do? I would be more than happy to point them in the right direction.
Yeah, great. And you know, I think attending the March for Life, right? Maybe you can't make it to DC, but if you're local in Texas, you know, the one in Austin is really, really, really easy to attend.
Yes.
I mean, it's not hard to park. Mm-hmm. It's not hard to, you know, walk. It's not like there's, you know, it's not like there's so many people like DC. There's no blizzard. Yeah. And, you know, you know, we've been going each year, mm-hmm. And this year this is just anecdotal, but it felt bigger. It felt like there was, mm-hmm. you know, there were a lot more, people marching. It took a lot longer to get started and took a lot longer to actually, you know, arrive at mm-hmm. the Capitol building. And so it feels like it is, you know, growing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you are, you know, in Texas or, you know, do other states, I didn't even realize, do other states do marches like Texas?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's most states, but I would imagine it's most, if not all states
do. So even if it's just like an overnight, like we drove out to Austin on, you know, on Friday morning, mm-hmm. we hiked during the day cause it's mm-hmm. fun to hike in the hills of Austin.
Yeah.
And then, you know, woke up, had breakfast and then did the march and met up with a couple of the people that we knew, and we brought our sons, mm-hmm. you know, and so, you know, so in our family, of course, you know, regular listeners will know it's Chuck and then my two boys and our two boys. And so, you know, I'm outnumbered by 3-1, but four of us were there that otherwise wouldn't have been four bodies at that march. And three of them were men,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the boys, you know, we were, randomly sort of interviewed for the march, and they asked the boys, why are you here? You know, and our boys are 7 and 4 and they said, well, we're marching for babies who can't march for themselves. You know, and
kids get it, man.
They do.
They get it better than the rest of us who have been desensitized by the cultural rhetoric.
Yeah. And I think like, especially with our boys, and because of the topics we cover on this show and people know how I speak, I never dumb things down for my kids. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily go into the grotesque, gory details, but I have been very honest with them, even though that they are very young, that people do abortions and they kill babies in mommy's bellies. And they're like, what does that, how is that even possible? And I remember your story from when you were little, you know, how you, it struck a chord in your heart, you know, for the rest of your life and led you to what you're doing now, you know,
they have such a strong sense of justice.
And
that
truth.
We lose
truth.
Over time, but it's so raw and pure in children. So they can be such huge, huge advocates, I think, in the pro-life movement.
So prayer, you know, we do live rosaries on Salt and Light. So you can, if you don't know how to do the rosary, you can, usually I do it on Friday mornings. I'll probably be doing it tomorrow morning, but if you, you know, if you want to join on, if you don't know how to pray, come on the Salt and Light Facebook page, and you can even scroll through our feed if you want to look at the recording and figure out, you know, how to pray it. We do the Litany of the Blessed Virgin afterwards. And so you can learn to pray the rosary. If you don't know how, you can either Google it or send me a private message, and I'll, you know, I'll walk you through it. The rosary is the most powerful weapon of our time.
And you have one built in right here.
You do. So. There you go. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so great. I'm glad that you do that.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you want to add?
Just, I would encourage people to visit humancoalition.org, not just for self-promotion purposes, but because you really can find a lot of educational resources there, and you can find some more information about how to get involved. So anyone who's feeling it on their heart to do something after hearing this, that's a good place to start.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So we'd like to thank you so much for joining the,
you
know, join the show.
Me.
This was a great update. Maybe we'll just have to have you on every year after the March for Life
I'm
for an abortion
for
update, pro-life update. This would be great. All right. We'd like to thank you all for joining us. And just as a reminder, if you have any podcast topics, if you want to send them in to us at Annie@saltandlightonline.com or any of our social media outlets on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook. And also remember that we are, we have a Patreon page for supporters of the show. We'd like to thank our current supporters who we will be continuing the discussion for a little bit longer with Lauren. Lauren's going to hang around after we finish this this audio portion. You'll be able to see a little bit more video of Lauren. She has some cool things to share. If you'd like to support us on Patreon, you can do so for as little as $2 a month, and you'll get, depending on the tier, you'll get exclusive content and bonus gifts. And I'd like to just also offer that whoever subscribes to Patreon this month, all of the proceeds for this month, when you sign up, we will donate to Human Coalition.
Wow, thank you.
Yeah.
Everyone needs to give to Annie through Patreon now.
That's right. So I'll put a link down in the show notes, and know that you know, if you support the show, it does go, you know, toward supporting our ministry. It's not free to do this, but for this month we will go ahead and donate anything that you guys subscribe for Human Coalition. So we'd like to thank you so much for joining us for this episode. And St. Anthony the Abbot,
pray for us.
And peace be with you.
You've been listening to the Salt and Light Podcast. Be salt and light, glorifying the Lord by your life.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington. Home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at LexusOfLexington.com.